Are you ready for this? Sony Oneonta's student radio station celebrating its 60th anniversary. Hey, we were there before then. We just weren't really a radio station.
Well, that was always the frustration in the 70s, is that we had a major in communications and we were still only heard in the buildings, you know?
Hey, careful. You could be heard on the sidewalk if you carried your transistor radio.
Right. In the right area, right? You had to walk down the power line.
Wherever the underground piping went.
And I knew where I could park the car and listen, too.
Since 1981, students at SUNY Brock would have had the chance to work on air at the college FM radio station, known as 89.1 FM The Point, one of the best regarded student operations in the U.S. Did you know it started as the Radio Club in 1957 and then became an on-campus only carrier current radio station known as WBSU AM in the 1960s? Today we meet Ron Rieger and Jerry Zielbrook, two WBSU student leaders from the late 60s who talk about those early days of BSU, the move from the Union in Lathrop Hall to the station's current location in the new Seymour College Union at that time, and how a carrier current radio station launched them both into careers in broadcasting. I'm Michael Doyle, class of 1980. Today I'm joined by faculty member, WBSU general manager, and SUNY Brockport alum Warren Kazareski, known to most of us as Kaz, and we explore the early days of WBSU on this episode of Where Golden Eagles Soar, the SUNY Brockport Alumni Podcast. Thanks for joining us today, guys. Could you introduce yourselves to our listeners?
Well, hi, I'm Ron Rieger, and I graduated in 1971. I thought I was typical back then as a four-year student, but I've learned that's really not typical. But that was my 4 years. I went there to be a high school science teacher and ended up in broadcasting.
Jerry Zielbro, technically I graduated 1970, but I really started in 1963. So long 4 years.
So Jerry, I know you weren't an undergrad at Brockport for seven straight years. I think you left for a year to attend elsewhere, and then I believe you were drafted into the service. Can you talk about the college in 63 when you got there and you know, what it was like when you came back and how you got involved in the radio club in the first place?
In 1963, it was the radio club. People who were interested in amateur radio or radio was among the listings in there. And I had an amateur radio license at the time. So I said, place to go. The total student population in 1963 was probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 2,000 plus or minus a couple of hundred. I got to the radio meeting and they weren't interested in amateur radio. They were into broadcast radio. But their idea of broadcast radio was a turntable, a Shure mixer, a microphone, all in one room, complete with a desk. And I thought, you know, I really like this. And I went to Brockport. It was a state teacher's college at the time. And an English or a professor in education course, which was a required course, who said, you're here because you want to be a teacher. Otherwise, what are you doing here? And I said, good point. When the year was over, I enrolled in that next fall of 64 at Midwest Broadcasting School in Chicago, Illinois. I finished that, went looking for a job, and in the meantime, I got a letter in the mail, courtesy of the President of the United States. I had a two-year, after that commitment was over, I went back to Brockport, and this time was the fall of 1968. The freshman class was bigger than 2,000, which is what it was in 63. And there were several new buildings and high-rise dorms. Radio station hadn't changed at all. It was still in one room in what was then the second floor of a student union, which I believe was called Lathrop.
Talk a little bit about like what the campus was like when you first got there in 63. So Lathrop was the student union.
Lathrop was also the men's dining room, you know, downstairs, which after 9 o'clock was a student union. From 6 to 9 was the men's dining room. On weekends, we could go to Brockway, which was the girls' dining room.
So, Ron, how did you come to Brockport and kind of get involved in the radio? It was still the radio club back then, right? Or had it changed?
Oh, it was still the radio club. The student union was different for me when I got there in 67. It was just building out. Everything was new on that western side of campus, that is, as it existed at the time. So that idea of that central mall was really pretty new. Before my senior year of high school, my parents moved from Buffalo to Rochester, and we ended up in Spencerport. Looking at what colleges to go to, Brockport was my only choice because I was a commuter student. And I did ride sharing for the first year with a friend from Spencerport. The second semester, my curriculum said to take Introduction to Public Speaking or something like that, speech. And Bob White was the professor. And somewhere along the line, we had to do a speech on history. And you had to get permission on your topic. So I asked Bob White, could I do a speech on the history of radio? He said, yes, I approve that topic. And if you join the radio club, I'll give you an A. And I think at that point, I didn't even realize there was a radio club. By my senior year, even though I was, no, junior year, even though I was commuting, I was living at the radio station. And I'd scare my younger siblings when I'd come home once in a while. That's a bit of an exaggeration, but that was life.
So talk about what the radio station was like in those early days in the carrier current. Like, where did people hear it? What were you broadcasting? Kind of what were you doing day to day?
The most feedback I remember early on was when it was playing in the speakers in the snack bar downstairs in Lathrop. And that was sort of the place where commuters went to get stuff.
Well, when I got back in 1968, the radio station really hadn't moved. It was still in one room. We ended up putting in a wall with a window so you could, for lack of better terms, decide that you had a studio and an office space in that one room. And we also moved the station from an interior room to an exterior room so that you could do a weather forecast by looking out the window. Brockport soccer was very big. More people went to the soccer than to the football games. They were going to be playing Hofstra on Long Island in a regional, I think, a quarterfinal game. So we telephone line, long distance, did the carrying. Ron and Don Peck went down to do the basically the play-by-play. I think Ron was, for lack of better terms, the engineer.
That was a great opportunity. And I'll just interrupt here to say, setting up that remote broadcast and figuring out how to do that prepared me for my first radio job, where I went around all of central New York hooking up live remote broadcasts from every fireman's carnival and parade around town for WNYR country station's remote broadcast. And I learned how to do it thanks to what Jerry put in place.
And what happened was, that was very interesting because that was our first, if you'll pardon the expression, break to the world. It was a Saturday broadcast, if I remember right. And even people in the administration came into either the offices or into Brockway, which was, for lack of better terms, a weekend cafeteria type thing, because they wanted to hear the soccer game.
I also want to reminisce about doing a soccer broadcast from Cortland. That had two announcers and was just a beautiful scene. And just that was entertaining. I really enjoyed that because I had one under my belt already.
So Ron, talk a little bit about the campus unrest and the takeover of the admin building For people who don't know, in those days, Hartwell Hall was the administration building on campus. And was there a lot going on at the radio station when all of that campus unrest and takeover was going on?
First of all, the station had already moved by that time, and we were in the student union building. We were in those gorgeous new facilities that were better than some of the professional places that I worked at later than that. What I recall, and this is 52 years ago now, so my memory isn't perfect, but I knew that the terrible things that happened in Kent State, the invasion, protests about the war in Vietnam, and the shootings at Kent State and other campuses were having problems. I was aware that active students were taking over the student union and had transitioned to Hartwell. I was so focused on being the station manager at WBSU, I really wasn't involved in student things. So my focus was WBSU, and I was at home. And my parents woke me up and said there was a news story about somebody burning down the Black Student Union, and there was something like a big campus disturbance, and that they were in the student union building. I was normally well-behaved as a child, but my parents told me not to go. I was 20 by that time, and I left. And I knew my way around the student union. I could get in through a kitchen door and went into the campus radio station. I was really impressed with what the people were doing who were the volunteers at the radio station. They were constantly answering phones, trying to get firsthand information. You know, asking, is this something you heard or something you saw?
Don Beck, who had done the play-by-play on the soccer game, actually did the first actuary on WHAM when he called in the fact that students were there.
Because we were really trying to tell what was really happening. And the rumors were horrible. And everybody was very frightened, including the people in the radio station. And we were starting to piece together some of the truth. And then I realized as manager, I had a problem with the staff. The restrooms were on the other side of the barricades, as was the dining room and some other services. So we had to do something. So I remember three of us. The other person I remember very clearly was Scotty Mann. The third person may have been Dave Gaylord. But Scotty Mann was the senior citizen in the radio station. He might have been about 30. But I remember him for folk music and watermelon or dandelion wine. And we talked about, we've got to do something. And there was this awakening that, wait a minute, yesterday, some of the people on the other side of the barricade were our friends or our coworkers, or we were on committees with them. Let's try to talk to them. Before that, it was just fear that it was like, the enemy was on the other side of that barricades. It's terrible for me to think of now, but that was the perception. It was all based on fear, misunderstanding, and rumors. So I remember very clearly the three of us going down, sort of supporting each other, asking for the leader who we knew. And he came down and talked to us very calmly. And I was the one who said, we would like to respectfully, or something like that, ask for permission for the ladies in the radio station to be able to use the restroom. It was like a humanitarian thing is what I thought. And the response I will never forget was, only the girls need to use the restroom? And I was like, oh, yeah. And he said, just do it. So we kept talking and invited him and some of the other leaders down to the studio to talk. And that was the transformation. And it was that night, more than anything, set the stage for the rest of my life. That was a turning point. At that point, I knew I wanted to do management, not on air, because I realized you can make a difference. But the most important thing was we sat around all night, sat around in a circle on the studio floor, that's the smaller studio now, and the central room was the control room. But we sat around on the floor and just talked to each other and learned about the fear on both sides. That bias, that misunderstanding just led to more and more tension and more conflict. And I know at the end of that, I realized that I just didn't understand. I had no idea what was really going on. And somebody else who was there, remember just a couple years ago, that I asked for a particular song to be played because of a line in the song. The song wasn't great, but there was a line in the song called Watching and Waiting by the Moody Blues. And the line was, watching and waiting for someone to understand me. And what I realized today is that everybody's aching for that understanding. I preach, but more important than preaching is listening. And I learned that night how valuable listening can be and how rarely it happens. But I want to emphasize that night changed my life, much like Larry Gostin's time at Brockport changed his life. So the lessons I learned there, the lessons I learned from Jerry, who was my mentor, was my path. And as I recall, afterwards, President Brown and the Dean of Students were listening to the radio station and determined that it wasn't as bad as they thought and decided they did not have to call police reinforcements in. And I got a letter a few weeks later inviting me to be on President Brown's Student Advisory Council.
I also want to say thank you, Ron. I did not realize I was your mentor, to be honest with you. We were all in it, I thought, together, just digging like crazy, trying to go forward, putting that station on the air. And it consumed undergraduate work for me as well. It was, you know, very, very important. So thank you for that.
Warren Kozareski, current faculty member and general manager of WBSU-FM. I have a quick question for you about the development of WBSU in the early years.
Do you think the years we spent as before we were FM were wasted years, or do you think it was kind of a good proving ground for the development of what the radio station's kind of rationale is?
I think if anything, we ran it like a real station, no matter what level it was, whether it was carrier current, a PA system, or 10 watts, 150 watts, and now 7,000 watts. We've always run it as a radio station. So I think those experiences, you found out who was serious and who wasn't. It kind of weeded out people pretty quickly about who was committed to it. And that didn't have to be career-wise, just committed as you made a commitment and you stick to it. You agree to do Tuesday mornings, you're here every Tuesday. For 14 weeks, you're here every Tuesday. If we teach nothing else, that commitment level or what a commitment is valuable too, I think. I don't think it was wasted at all.
Do you guys remember... or know how you converted from being, hey, we're going to be available here in the union, to a carrier current station? What was that process like, and how did you go about doing it? That was all during your time, right?
Yeah, basically it was running a bunch of, I think, RG58 or 59 that they wouldn't let us do, that the maintenance people had to do literally on the conduits from Lathrop through the rest of the campus over to what was the girl squad in the high-rise buildings, and then carrier current, if you'll pardon the expression, transmitters in the base. It was a physical type thing, but it radiated, you know, the RG59, even though it was insulated, you could still walk with a transistor radio and literally follow the ductwork on the campus. But at least that's what I remember, crawling around and getting into the for lack of better terms, the manholes where the conduit was, where we had to feed or split off the cables and the splitters.
When I got there, it was carrier current, and I never knew about the history at that point. So it was carrier current. The only thing that I experienced was as we added dorms and opened new dorms, and it went to more places on campus. I don't think we even conceived of it being FM as being possible at that time. So it's great now.
Hey, I know I've taken a lot of your time, gentlemen. Is there anything else about your time at BSU that you would want to say or that I haven't asked you about?
I am very pleased at where WBSU is now, and I realize that a lot of that, or most of that, really has to do with the leadership of Kaz. I mean, he's a person who is committed to that station, probably as we were when we were building things. There's no doubt in my mind that it would not be where it is today if it were not for the people who came after us. Ron came right after me, and then the others who cared enough about what they were doing.
I would also like to mention the last Hall of Fame broadcast, or the last Hall of Fame event, and just meeting some of the students and just being so impressed and hopeful that they're in that same state of mind. And when Terry Spence did his acceptance speech, he talked about WBSU as a fraternity, both genders. But it is that, and it's just amazing to me how many people from those days are still involved in my life. And that's not imaginable to current students, that in the year 2070-something, they'll still be connected with people from Brockport, and I hope they are. But I'm really appreciative to what you're doing, and I echo Jerry of what Kaz has done and is doing. It's a great thing to be involved in. I'm glad this is all working the way it is.
Ron mentions the words of Tariq Spencer, Brockport class of 99, and a recent inductee into the WBSU Hall of Fame. Tariq's thoughts have been echoed by many over the years, that the college radio station was the center of their college experience at Brockport and looms large on their successful careers, including my career. In future episodes, we'll explore WBSU in the 70s and the move to FM radio in 1981. Thanks to Jerry Ziobro and Ron Rieger for their memories of the early days, from the Amateur Radio Club to WBSU Carrier Current AM 600. For Warren Kaz Kazareski, I'm Michael Doyle, class of 1980. Thanks for listening to Where Golden Eagles Soar, the SUNY Brockport Alumni Podcast. WBSU.